This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 21st of March, 2025. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I'm accompanied in the studio by readers Daphne Popart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And Paul Newman.
Hi.
The first thing to say is if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on the number on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, please make sure it is plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, don't forget that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or go back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website. That's www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent first on the list. Now let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. Transport Secretary says scheme critical. Police bosses bid to be new mayor. And road diversion plan put back. And the first headline story, please, Daphne.
The Transport Secretary has described work on Junction 9 of the M3 as an absolutely critical scheme. Heidi Alexander visited the work compound for the scheme near Winchester on Thursday, March the 13th, touring the site. The scheme, which has had £290 million of funding confirmed from the government, aims to tackle congestion at Junction 9 by increasing the number of lanes from 3 to 4 through the junction as it passes under a wider gyratory with free-flowing links between the M3 and the A34 in both directions. When asked about criticism that the scheme will attract more traffic similar to the previous M3 extension through Twyford Down in the 1990s, Ms. Alexander said, "I know that areas of Winchester are expanding. When I got out of the train station this morning and visited the InstaVolt Superhub at Three Maids Hill, I could see the number of new homes that are being built. People want to live in this part of the country, so it's really important that we match the development that is happening with new infrastructure. I know people who live in Winchester and are coming home, perhaps after a day at work or a visit to friends, could spend up to 20 minutes trying to traverse this junction. And so tackling that congestion is really important for the quality of life for local people. But it is also about supporting the economy, because if we are building those new homes, then we need the capacity to deal with the cars. But it is also a critical part of ensuring our economy is firing on all cylinders, because we have the docks down in Southampton. If there are lorries picking things up from the docks, dropping stuff off there, businesses want to know that their deliveries are going to be timely. And that is why this interchange is so significant and so important." National Highways Chief Executive Nick Harris was also visiting the development site. "When asked about what mitigation measures will be taken to ease congestion when the work starts, he said, "Part of the reason it is taking 3 years is to keep both those important routes, the M3 and A34, open and running during the work. So an awful lot of planning goes into a project like this. We build a digital model so that we're able not only to understand the construction, but to understand the impact on the existing routes and come up with traffic management which keeps those routes open.
Police bosses bid to be new mayor. The Police and Crime Commissioner for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight has announced her intention to stand in the first mayoral elections for the new strategic authority. Hampshire and the Solent region were successful in applying to be part of the government's devolution fast track initiative. Under this programme, a strategic authority will be created and elections for a mayor will take place in May 2026. Typically, mayors will have responsibility for areas such as infrastructure, transport, skills, employment and housing, with powers and funding transferred from Westminster to the new authority. Conservative Hampshire and Isle of Wight Police and Crime Commissioner Donna Jones, who was elected to a second term last year, said it was clear the current devolution proposals would likely see her role's office and the governance of the fire service subsumed to the mayor's office. The former leader of Portsmouth City Council said, "Embedding public safety within the broader scope of regional governance is key. Community safety must be a central pillar to benefit the unique aspects of Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, the two counties I care so deeply about. That is why I intend to run as mayor for Hampshire and the Solent in the mayoral elections in May 2026. Ms. Jones said the plan for devolution was one of the biggest changes in governance nationally and locally in a generation. It offered huge opportunities for the region, she added. The current police and crime commissioner said strong public protection and safer neighbourhoods must be at the heart of the strategic authority. Last month, the government launched a public consultation on creating a strategic authority in the region. Residents, businesses and stakeholders have until April the 13th to share their views on the proposals for the areas covered by Hampshire County Council, Portsmouth City Council, Southampton City Council and Isle of Wight Council. Other areas being fast-tracked include Cumbria, Cheshire and Warrington, Norfolk and Suffolk, Greater Essex and Sussex and Brighton. The Devolution Strategic Authority Programme is separate to discussions taking place on local government reorganisation, which will see the current mix of two-tier and unitary councils replaced with larger organisations delivering all services.
Road diversion plan put back. A hugely controversial plan to divert a major Winchester road through the new housing development has been delayed. Andover Road was set to be closed to through traffic next year, and the route switched along Winchester Avenue to the new King's Barton estate. The change was due to happen when 650 homes in the 2000 home scheme were occupied, but developer Carla has persuaded the Highways Authority, Hampshire County Council, to delay the move until 1,000 homes are completed. 1,000 rather than 650. Currently, 675 homes are occupied, which means the switch should already have been triggered. So, the switch will not happen in 2026, as forecast last year, but in December 2027. Viv Hill, head of design for Carla, told the King's Barton Forum that there were technical reasons for the delay, not least the expected impact of the construction of the £290 million revamp of Junction 9 of the M3A34 interchange at Winnall. A letter from the County Council to the City Council said, this update has been prepared to advise the forum of discussions held with Carla Holmes relating to changes to the trigger points contained in the Section 106 agreement entered into with the Highway Authority, that is, Hampshire County Council. This is in response to Carla Holmes advising the Highway Authority that they will not be able to meet the trigger points for completion of the highway works. The delays will affect not only the diversion, but also upgrades to Andover Road intersection, Hairstock Road Junction, Andover Road Junction with Stony Lane, Andover Road Wellhouse Lane Junction. The letter added, while the Highway Authority, County Council, is disappointed the original trigger points will not be achieved, it is satisfied that an agreed variation will enable the development to come forward safely and enable the necessary works approved through the outline planning permission to be delivered. City Council leader Martin Todd said, I think we're all frustrated at how long this is taking. County and Carla have real questions to answer as to why progress on the roads, particularly inside the estate, has been so painfully slow. The good news from last night's King's Barton Forum meeting is that the south of King's Barton will be soon be connected to the north of King's Barton. Now, there's a photograph here which is quite interesting and illuminating. It shows the length of Winchester Avenue and its width with two lanes and a sort of middle section. And a line of identically bricked, but not red, attractively coloured brickwork, and attractive young saplings growing on the grass verges, with the figures of Mike Slynn and Nigel Palmer photographed, who are both campaigners against the diversion from Andover Road to the said Winchester Avenue.
Thank you. That concludes the headline stories. I will go on with the death notices now, and Daphne will follow with Christian comment. Here are the death notices. Browning, Stanley Arthur, passed away on the Isle of Wight, aged 87, on the 16th of March 2025. Chard, Walter Richard, known as Wally, passed away peacefully on Tuesday the 25th of February at Winchester Hospital, aged 95 years. Chase, Colin Arthur, passed away on the 1st of March 2025, aged 84 years. Listeners may remember Colin's widow, Barbara Chase, who for many years put together the What's On item for our weekly Chronicle readings. She was also very involved with the running of the Colebrook Club. Next, Collins, Michael Roberts, Mike, passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 28th of February, aged 60 years. Colleen, Deirdre Lena, passed away peacefully at home on the 21st of February, 2025, aged 84 years. Davis, Doreen Olivia, died peacefully on the 8th of March, 2025, at Mary Louise House, aged 92. Field, Mari Daphne, passed away peacefully in Winchester on the 7th of March, 2025, aged 96 years. Fraser, Jim, died peacefully on the 21st of February, 2025, aged 89 years. Halfaker, Trevor William, on the 28th of February, 2025. Marshall, Richard Keith, passed away on the 24th of February, 2025, aged 68 years. Patient, Marjorie, passed away peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 6th of March 2025, aged 91 years. Scott, George, passed away peacefully surrounded by his family at Winchester Hospice on the 7th of March 2025. Simon, Ida May, passed away peacefully at Mountbatten Hospice, aged 104, on the 3rd of March 2025. Wake, Mary, late of Shedfield, died after a short battle with her health on the 16th of February 2025, aged 90 years. Christian comment has been written by the Reverend Philip Crinks this week. He observes, "Seek and you shall find." Thank you, Daphne.
At a recent service, the reading was familiar. Ask and it shall be given to you. Seek and you shall find. Knock and the door shall be opened to you. It struck me that right now a lot of people would react to this verse by saying, unfortunately, life isn't that simple. Surely we ask God for lots of things and we don't get them. And there are many things we are seeking in life and we don't find them. The question, I suppose, is what things we are looking for and whether they are really the right ones, or the right one, singular. I say that having in mind the famous book by the Danish philosopher Søren Kierkegaard, which had an even more famous title, Purity of Heart is to Will One Thing. What is this one thing which we need to will if our hearts are to be pure? The answer is to reflect the pure, absolute goodness of God, which is sovereign over all creation. We do this by loving him with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. This is the first and greatest commandment. Whatever and whoever else we think is lovable, and of course many are, they are lovable because they reflect God's goodness. This realization is what enables us to order our other loves. Immediately, this ordering brings us to the second great commandment. We are often tempted to put ourselves first and let those who depend on us take their chance. But that behaviour does not reflect God's goodness. Rather, we are to love our neighbours as ourselves. What Kierkegaard's title points out is that the absolute unconditioned goodness of God is one thing. So why not focus on that and the two commandments it implies? Why not focus on that, as shown forth in the teaching, life, death, and rising again of Jesus? We say life isn't that simple, but it's mostly us complicating it. Christianity is offering us a way back to simplicity by getting things in the right order. Much of the complexity we experience as weighing us down could be experienced as an abundance of gifts from God. To see that, we need an attitude of gratitude for all that is good in our lives. Rather than thinking, as we all sometimes do, if only I had more money, a better car, a larger house, we could think, thank God I have my daily bread, freedom to travel widely, and a safe and dry place to sleep. And to that, we could add, thank God I have a faith which enables me to get things into the proper perspective and to will one thing. Ask and it will be given to you. Search and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened for you. For everyone who asks receives, and everyone who searches finds, and for everyone who knocks the door will be opened.
And now this week's letters to the editor. Nick, can you start us off with Sour Signals, please?
Yes, the first one is from Nick Ray. Mobile phone reception for both sending and receiving voice calls and sending texts is scandalously atrocious in parts of Winchester, a situation which appears to be only worsening as the city's population grows. Tradesmen often roll their eyes at the idea of being able to make or receive a call, and I know few people locally who haven't struggled for decades with regularly missed important business, family, GP or other calls. Increasingly, banks and utilities require a mobile call to authenticate any account-related query or service. If you can't make this call, it can be like lacking a key to open your own front door. The costs to regional productivity alone must be enormous. The Ombudsman recently upheld my complaint to O2 about these issues, and O2 admitted switching capacity issues, such as well as coverage, mast and network problems. Yet the £100 fine levied is hardly going to make telecoms companies invest in the infrastructure that their services clearly need to provide the services customers appear to have been promised, subject to small print, and should reasonably expect to receive for their subs. An experiment using Vodafone was no better, and Wi-Fi router calls did not always work reliably either. How big is this problem across the city and Hampshire, and what can be done to put pressure on phone companies to provide the services the various outlets in the high street promise but appear to not always deliver? And that one's from Nick Ray, Fordington Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
Road woes. Now this letter is a response to what Daphne read about the opening of the Junction 9 M3 by the visit of the Transport Minister, which he regarded as with a critical acclaim the advantages. Keir Starmer, in his commitment to increased defence spending, stated, "In the short term, it can only be funded through hard choices." His first choice was to cut foreign aid. This week, we have seen approval of an enormously expensive road scheme, the rebuilding of the M3 Junction 9. At the inquiry into this scheme, it was already apparent that its economic justification, even in the absurd calculation mechanism used by National Highways, was marginal and only met any kind of value for money criterion by the invention without any justification of what National Highways called wider economic benefits. What we see now is a scheme costing £290 million, which, discounted to the 2015 economic base year, computes to £177 million, compared with the figure presented to the inquiry of £113 million, a rise of 57% on the original estimate. At the inquiry, National Highways indignantly rejected the Winchester Friends of the Earth argument that the normal 33% optimism bias should be applied to the construction estimate, saying that they had already allowed for all contingencies. Against this increased construction cost, the supposed user benefits of travel cost reduction can only be assumed to have declined since the inquiry. They are dependent on a growth forecast that has already significantly failed to appear and cannot be plausibly relied upon. The benefit to cost ratio is now 0.86, even before we factor in the failure of the predicted growth curve. This is a project where the taxpayer spends significantly more than he/she gets back. In a world where monsters are in power and insanity grows by the day, This piece of economic and environmental madness may not seem much, but Winchester will be plagued by years of traffic disruption, noise and pollution, followed by major traffic growth on its streets. The scheme economics feeds on and generates this growth, and no comparable benefit. The economy of the nation does not improve. Road building generally correlates with a declining GDP downstream. Public transport suffers, and net zero objectives are no longer plausible. Sir Keir Starmer has announced that NHS England will be abolished and absorbed into the Department of Health and Social Care. Whatever the arguments for that, there is a much stronger case for demolishing the National Highways Agency. It is an unaccountable agency that makes its own rules for spending taxpayers' money. The business cases for most road building decisions are not even seen by a minister. This is written by Christopher Gillam, Winchester Friends of the Earth, Upper High Street, Winchester.
And this next letter comes from Eileen Berry, and it's headed Put People First. Forgive me for once more addressing the urgently needed Winchester Hospital to remain. Why it is imperative that Winchester Hospital should not just remain but be completely upgraded. The alarm bells are ringing loud and clear with the proposed expansion of housing. To my estimation, with the prospects of Lanham Lane, Bushfield and Sir John Moore Barracks having housing development in the pipeline, as I perceive it, we are having another 2,000 homes being built at least. Work that out to 3 people per house, so we are talking around 6,000 extra to the population. Barton Farm still has got 1,000 properties to be built. It's complete madness to expect, with the population growing massively, to close a hospital through mismanagement, because that is what it comes down to. An ever expansion of immigrants that are trying to find a home. It's likely that we haven't seen the last of that particular problem of housing. Of course, if you say an estimation, that could rise to over 100,000, all within the vicinity and the villages surrounding the city of Winchester. All will need a home, all will need health care, all will need social and welfare, and where are they all to go? To a hospital that isn't going to be built, and to distances that are too far for really, really ill people who need instant hospitalisation. Somebody is not thinking about the future. So the cost. Of course, the cost will be enormous to transform the Winchester Hospital. But it's going to cost billions to build the new hospital anyway. We have the land, we have the hospital shell. If we had to gut it and start again, and I know for a fact it's been completely overmanned, the system would have to completely change. There are an awful lot of managing jobs, and then they have managers overseeing them. That goes through the system where they have another body of people purely doing admin. Often people are employed who know nothing at all about medicine. They are managers. The priority should be nurses, doctors, and consultants. The whole system is wrong, and we have the ability to start over again, where people are put first, not last. And that comes from Eileen Berry, Priorsdean Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
Tony Gaster writes about a thriving street. Those who say the High Street is dead are wrong. I drive through Marlborough every month, and there is a thriving high street full of small shops, like those which have disappeared from Winchester. Many places, like Hedge End, still support thriving out-of-town businesses. Currys, Halfords and Homebase are all gone from here. At least in Winchester, you can eat at a different place every day of the month. Yes, our high street is changing, but I wonder if that's for the good. We do need to support those of our small shops that remain, or we may soon all suffer from indigestion. And that's Tony Gaster, Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery, sent that one in.
Roger Stevens of Cliffway Compton in Winchester is fulminating. I have sympathy with Caroline Bullen, Chronicle Letters, February the 20th, in her plight of loss of earnings and a less than full pension. It is not unusual for men and women to find themselves ejected from their employment at a late stage in their career. Many have no option but to take whatever employment is available, be it permanent contract or 0 hours, where they may find themselves reporting to a supervisor half their age. When the state pension was introduced, it was based on the national mortality statistics, which suggested that many people would not survive to reach pensionable age, and on average, those who did survive would only draw their pension for 7 years. With improvements in general living standards and healthcare, longevity has increased dramatically, and in its original form, the state pension has become unaffordable. We are currently in the worst of both worlds. The state pension age has increased, but employers are still living in the past, where they regard the 60-plus as doddery, clapped-out old wrecks ripe for disposal. As individual managers, they also resent the presence of people more knowledgeable and experienced than themselves. Coming back to my gripe with the WASPies, I do not think that people should be compensated for their consequences of their ignorance of current events. And finally, I don't rant, I fulminate. Roger Stevens, Cliffway, Compton, Winchester.
Daphne.
Now a very short letter from Kevin De Cruz, headed Vote Them Out. Liz Kendall and this fraud of a Labour government are a disgrace, cutting benefits from the most vulnerable. I know some people on PIP who use it to pay their high energy and food bills, as their current benefits are so low. This ignorant government needs to look after its own people. Let's vote them out next election. They will lose disastrously. And that's from Kevin De Cruz, Pine Road, Bishop's Waltham.
And here's a report on the AGM of muscular dystrophy. Year of success. The AGM of muscular dystrophy was held on Tuesday, February the 11th. Chairman Anne Jones addressed each member of her committee individually, making each one of us feel great. She told us that apart from raising a sum of nearly £7,000 for the charity, we had also been invaluable in raising public awareness. There were 7 fundraising events during 2024. Hyde Plant Sale, Rick Stein Coffee Morning, Church Cottage Compton Coffee Morning, Car Boot Sale, a Table Sale at Chandler's Ford Methodist Fair, Murder Mystery Play, and the Christmas Coffee Morning. All in all, a really successful year. We are now full of enthusiasm for the future. And that's from Barbara Anderson, Press Secretary for Muscular Dystrophy Winchester.
Simon Lever wishes a happy retirement to Dean Catherine Ogle. Dean Catherine brought joy, togetherness, kindness and warmth, enlightening the experience of cathedral visitors and worshippers with her welcoming, empathetic smile and dedication to her role as Dean. As a voluntary steward at the Kings and Scribes exhibition, thus spending quite some time in the cathedral, I shall certainly miss her presence. There were obviously issues that required attention and ultimately a solution, but hiring a lawyer would seem rather extreme. I wish Catherine Ogle a happy and contented retirement with more time with her family. I certainly look forward to wishing her all the best for the future. Simon Lena, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
This letter is from John M. Falston, and it's headed Thank You. I would like to say a very big thank you to all the kind people who came to assist me on Friday, March the 14th in the afternoon, when I had not one but two falls on my way back home. I am not thinking of making a habit of this, I assure you. The falls happened at the junction of Stockbridge Road and Berwick Road, and then again at Beer Close and Stockbridge Road. My sincere thanks to all those who helped me and made sure I got home safely. I am a pensioner with sight and hearing difficulties, so kindness means a lot to me. And that's from John M. Falston, Beer Close, Week, Winchester.
So in our last letter this morning, Elizabeth Rake writes about the day Monty came to school. I heard this story when I worked at Montgomery of Alamein School in the 1970s. Mr. Dennis Beecham came to the Romsey Road Boys Secondary School in 1967. His energy and determination completely changed the ethos of the school. He decided a new name was appropriate and approached General Montgomery. Mr. Beecham had been an officer in Monty's regiment during the war. Monty agreed that the school could be renamed Montgomery, but only if "of Alamein" was added. The opening was on July the 1st, 1968. All the boys and staff were gathered, seated in front of the main entrance. It was a lovely day and everyone was excited, watching for the car to appear with the wartime hero. However, the first vehicle which came up the drive was a corporation dust cart, emblazoned with the maker's name, Dennis, across the front. There was much laughter, as this was not quite what the headmaster had planned. Happily, Monty soon arrived and the ceremony went ahead. When I interviewed Dennis Beecham for the Millennium edition of the Chronicle, he confirmed the account. There are probably many old Bill boys still living in Winchester who were there on the day. And that's from Elizabeth Rake, Marston Gate, Hyde, Winchester. And there's an edited note just to remind people that Montgomery of Alamein School is now called King's.
Thank you all. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle, all one word, .co.uk. Or you can write an old-style letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Right, we'll carry on now with editorial comment, first person, Bulgarum, and letter from Westminster. Now, the editor heads up her article this week with spending £290 million and not solving any issues. She writes, "We have said it before, and it is worth repeating. The £290 million, up from £210 million, to be spent on the Junction 9 improvement work will not solve highways problems. Transport Secretary Heidi Alexander visited the contractor's compound last Thursday and made bold claims, including that it would help with the construction of 2,000 homes at King's Barton. As an aside, the Junction 9 work is actually delaying things at King's Barton, with developer Carla Holmes saying their work will be impeded by the likely traffic congestion of the Junction 9 scheme. As this comment has noted before, in 2021 and 2024, the new road layout may solve the problem of the Winall roundabout, but it will lead to increased road traffic and thus dangerous problems elsewhere, possibly locally. Will we see queuing traffic backing up from Bar End Roundabout onto the northbound M3 at peak hours? Much more money should be spent on developing the railways and public transport than feeding the insatiable demands of roads. You don't have to be a former member of the Donga tribe to know this. And make no mistake, this really is a big scheme that is going to cause traffic bedlam in the city. You'll have to be in your late 40s to at least to be a driver who remembers the chaos caused by the building of the M3 through Twyford Down between 1992 and 1994. The city centre regularly snarled up as drivers sought to avoid the roadworks. Things will be the same this time and probably worse, as the city is substantially bigger than it was 30 years ago. The scheme is expected to take around 3 years. It's going to be a long 3 years for the city. And now, Joanna Lewis writes in praise of the NHS in first person this week. Daphne.
Do you have any piercings? What do you mean? Came the outraged response. Why are you asking me if I have any penguins? For some reason, this exchange between a young nurse and one of her elderly, hard-of-hearing female patients has stuck in my mind. I overheard it during an unplanned hospital stay recently. Perhaps that's because a sense of humour seems essential to the NHS experience these days, whether you are ill or working inside it. When I found myself in A&E, 2 a.m, on that Saturday in late January, Happy New Year messages were still ringing in my ears. One text assuring me that 2025 is gonna be a good one felt particularly jarring, as I was attached to a drip by the time I saw the gastro team mid-morning. They quickly interpreted the results. Immediate surgery. If your levels go up, you will be in intensive care fighting for your life. In any case, you will have to make major changes in the long term. 10 hours after arriving, I was on a ward, leaving behind an assortment that included Chinese students, drug addicts, and one very angry Welshman, who's probably a lot angrier now after last Saturday. Thankfully, I'm on the mend. In effect, my life was saved. I am truly grateful for the care I had. But occasionally, you wondered. We all know of or have read of cases that end tragically, the effect of long waiting lists, human error, or fatigue. There were a few glimpses of how it can go wrong, and brushes with NHS manager interventions that are not always patient recovery centric. As one doctor said, hospitals are awful places to be in unless you're paid to be there. But my goodness, it's impossible not to come away with a sense of how everyday miracles are being achieved by staff, many stretched like elastic. There are simply far too many people seeking treatment. Still, much remains of the NHS I remember from years past. The old rickety trolleys, industrial-sized floor polishers, the weak flushing toilets, the mind-boggling brilliance of the surgeons, charismatic, confident, thank goodness, cutting people open one day, training young doctors the next, keeping up to date on research, and, God only knows, the latest HR directives. But the nurses, I have a whole new respect for. 12-hour shifts, the reams of paperwork, the long team of handovers that look like a battalion going over the latest battle casualties. It's dirty, repetitive, smelly, emotionally draining work. A constant diurnal pattern of taking blood, changing catheters, measuring stuff, crisis response, or speaking to distraught families. Pain hurts not just the person feeling it. It was especially touching seeing trainee nurses from Winchester University coming onto a ward for the first time. They were so professional and dedicated, nervous but excited. Why places are being cut for UK-based nursing courses beggars belief. And how has the NHS managed to lose so many experienced senior female nurses? They have such medical wisdom from experience. Plus, they lead by example in how to effectively deal with more behaviourally challenging patients, who, incidentally, seem to fall into two categories. First, men. Some apparently constantly ringing their buzzers for attention and expecting everything done for them. Surely not. But more seriously and tragically, the young patients there due to drug addiction tested everyone. The upsetting sight of what drug abuse does to young, vulnerable women in their 20s and 30s, but who look so much older, is still giving me nightmares. We need the Office for Health Improvement and Disparities to urgently fund more local prevention and education campaigns, and the end to illegal drugs being ordered online for home delivery. Still, ultimately, my New Year well-wishers and predictors were right. For if you can walk out of hospital when many cannot, then you absolutely have had a great start to the year.
Annabel Garham's look at Winchester life from an alternative angle this week features a vintage vehicle right up your street, Nick.
Yes. A rare fire truck will lead the way. A rare and historic vehicle will lead Hampshire's VE Day 80th anniversary road run event. The Dennis Fire Appliance from the Second World War will announce the arrival of 60 classic military and other vehicles on Saturday, May the 10th. The convoy, as a salute to the greatest generation, will drive from Southwick, near Fareham, to Basingstoke. The vehicles, escorted by members of the Royal British Legion Riders Branch, will leave Southwick at 10 a.m. The first section of the route will take them along the B2177 to Wickham and the A32 through the Meon Valley, joining the A31 at Alton. Unlike previous years, the convoy will avoid the town centre by taking White Down Lane and the B3349 to join the new Odeon Road. A pit stop is planned at Lasham Airfield between 11 a.m. and 11:30 a.m. before the run into Basingstoke and the noon arrival at Milestones Living History Museum. This year, seats in some of the classic vehicles have been reserved for veterans, and at least two other guests on the day are survivors of the London Blitz. The road run is organised by a small group of volunteers, including members of the Royal British Legion, with practical support from DGCS Security of Basingstoke, Auto Signs of Reading, South Coast Cop Cars, and Rainet Communications. Donations received on the day will support the annual poppy appeal. And of course, this article has to be accompanied by a photo of the dear old Dennis fire engine, all together with its cranking handle to be able to start the thing.
And on a completely different tack, it's a letter from Westminster this week, and it's from the Winchester MP, Danny Chambers. Paul.
I'm sure many of you have been following the latest chaos from Trump in recent weeks. Things are moving so quickly that I'm sure by the time you're reading this, some new major development has taken place. With the Trump administration taking wild and unpredictable actions against allies, like abandoning support to Ukraine, trade tariffs, and withdrawing from international bodies like the World Health Organization, his tantrums and incompetence will have an effect on us here in the United Kingdom and even here in Hampshire. I'm proud that Liberal Democrats have been there in Parliament warning about Trump's unreliability and calling for the government to work closely with European allies to support Ukraine where Trump will not. I know many people here in Winchester and across the United Kingdom have long supported Ukraine and took in war refugees. I'm proud of that support and proud to welcome Ukrainians here alongside refugees from other conflicts, escaping war and persecution. As a possible ceasefire hangs in the balance, we must be ready for the possibility that Trump changes his mind yet again and cuts off support. Britain should be ready to step up if that happens and do what we can to prevent Putin from conquering Ukraine and setting his sights on the next target. I am pleased to see our government recognise the need to lead on this security threat and work with our more reliable partners in Europe and the Commonwealth. The reality is that we do need to reverse the damage done to our armed forces by the previous government's years of cuts and begin a process of disentangling our defence capabilities and critical infrastructure from American dependencies. Unfortunately, however, this government has decided to meet these needs by sacrificing the poorest in society with further cuts to welfare and disability payments. At the same time, there are hugely profitable law companies like the big banks, energy giants and tech industries who find it easy to avoid paying their fair share in tax. The government hasn't even bothered to consider new ways to target them and get the economy growing for everyone. The threat Trump poses to global public health could have significant repercussions for our own health service here in Hampshire. He has withdrawn the United States from the World Health Organization, cast doubt on the importance of vaccines, and allowed the richest man in the world to obliterate America's overseas aid work almost overnight. To then see our own government decide that perhaps the UK should also cut its overseas development programs is deeply alarming and a costly mistake. This is not just a humanitarian issue for people overseas relying on these programs. It is a matter of national security. A threat anywhere in the world is a threat to the United Kingdom. Disease does not respect borders, with our NHS already struggling to cope each flu season. We cannot afford to abandon that line of defence which stops diseases taking hold before they spread to the United Kingdom. With Trump taking America down an authoritarian path to our West and Putin refusing to end his imperial ambitions in the East, Britain is well placed to partner with democracies in Europe and Commonwealth allies like Canada to take a leading role in this world once again in a stand for freedom in the face of tyranny. If there are any issues or concerns you have, do get in touch at danny.chambers.mp@parliament.uk.
Thank you. Now let's take a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. I have a little article here. It's about a selection of shows at the Theatre Royal. The Theatre Royal Winchester will host a series of fresh and experimental shows later this month. The performances are part of RAW, that's big R, big A, big W, Winchester's new Contemporary Performance Week, which runs from Tuesday, March the 25th to Saturday, March the 29th. The RAW programme will offer audiences a range of innovative shows featuring drama, dance, music, song, spoken word and immersive elements. These will be performed at the theatre, the Arc and the Nutshell, with people encouraged to try something different during the week. Theatre Royal Winchester will host three of the eight shows that form the Raw programme, including The Alice Project on Tuesday, March the 25th. This is a journey through the wonderland of Alice, weaving together original music, Lewis Carroll's text, and voices from interviews exploring transformation, identity, and growing older. The Nature of Forgetting on March the 26th and 27th tells the story of a man called Tom, who, living with young onset dementia, is preparing for his 55th birthday party when past memories come flooding back. The show was developed with the Alzheimer's Society and UCL neuroscience professor Kate Jeffrey. Bach Reimagined on Saturday, March the 29th, breathes new life into the works of composer Johann Sebastian Bach through powerful dance and electrifying music that transcends classical to create a soundscape with a heavy metal twist. During Raw Week, there will also be a writer's workshop with author David Palin on Saturday, March 29th. Derek Newland, the chief executive of Play to the Crowd, which runs Theatre Royal Winchester, said, "I'm very excited about Raw. The aim of the collaboration is to bring the best national contemporary performance to Winchester, alongside providing a platform for emerging local creative talent. We want to encourage the public to step out of their comfort zone, take some risk, and try something a little different to what they may normally choose to see. We are thankful to Winchester City Council for supporting this idea through their UK Shared Prosperity funding." So, the Alice Project will be at Theatre Royal Winchester on Tuesday, March the 25th at 7:30. The Nature of Forgetting will be at the theatre on Wednesday the 26th and Thursday the 27th of March at 7:30, plus a Thursday matinee at 1:30. And Bach Reimagined is on Saturday, March the 29th at 7:30. We have one or two other little bits of that might be interesting. Hal Crottenden, the comedian, is performing on Friday the 28th of March at the Attic. That's 32 Windsor Road, Southampton. It's in Totton. Good venue. That's at 7 p.m. and tickets are available at £14. On Saturday the 29th of March, there's an evening with Southampton FC legends. That's at Central Hall, Southampton. It's hosted by Kenzie Benali. It's at Central Hall, St Mary Street, Southampton. And tickets are available on 0844 888 9991. The other thing we have is Verdi's Requiem. That's at 7:30 p.m. on Friday the 4th of April. It will be performed by the Wayne Fleet Singers with the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra, members of the Bournemouth Symphony Chorus, and four stellar soloists, all conducted by Andrew Lumsden. And that is at Winchester Cathedral, in the Cathedral Close. It starts at 7:30 and tickets are from £15 to £50, and info is from the Wayne Fleet Singers. And now here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 22nd of March, the sun will set at 6:21 p.m. and on Wednesday the 26th of March, the sun will rise at 5:56 a.m. and will set at 6:28 p.m. And now on to items of general news. Daphne, would you like to kick us off, please?
Yes. Now, this is headed Opposition to Hybrid Plans for Night Spot. Scores of residents are objecting to an application to open a new type of night spot in Winchester city centre. David Jamal Benamore of Benamore Limited is hoping to reopen Vodka Bar and Nightclub in Upper Brook Street as a mixed-use food hall and nightclub. The site has been empty since a drug bust discovered a cannabis factory there in November 2023. His idea is based on his existing premises, successfully operated in Bournemouth, in a venue called Helch Market. A council officer's report into the application notes that the applicant is proposing to operate the premises as mixed use of the top two floors, mainly used as a food hall, with several independent food traders and bars, and a dedicated nightclub event space area in the basement. The application covers the sale of alcohol, late-night refreshments, live and recorded music, plays, films, indoor sporting events, boxing or wrestling entertainment, dancing and similar activities. If approved, the venue would be allowed to operate from 10 a.m. to 3 a.m. Monday to Saturday. On Sundays, the club would be open from 10 a.m. to midnight, while on New Year's Eve, the club is seeking permission to open from 10 a.m. until 10 a.m. on New Year's Day. Winchester City Council has received 19 written objections from members of the public in relation to the prevention of crime and disorder, public safety, the prevention of public nuisance, and the protection of children from harm. Michael Coker Davis of Upper Brook Street wrote, "Vodka Bar has long supplied cheap alcohol to late-night drinkers. Throughout its previous existence, it continuously attracted late-night alcohol-fueled issues, fighting, shouting, swearing, and criminal damage. My own vehicle was written off by drunk youths jumping on the roof of my car. This was logged with Hampshire Police at the time. The location of the premises is completely unsuited to what is essentially a residential area. The licensing subcommittee will discuss the application on Tuesday, March the 25th. Mr. Benamore has been contacted for further details.
£13 million grant boost for bus services. A fresh injection of cash to help bus services across Hampshire will be spent on better lighting and CCTV at shelters, real-time passenger information and infrastructure improvements at colleges. Some £13 million is set to be spent on measures aimed at improving local bus services across Hampshire during 2025 and 2026. The £13 million grant provided by the Department for Transport will mean that Hampshire County Council can fund priority schemes and initiatives that make bus journeys on main routes faster, more frequent, reliable, and greener. Stuart Jones, a member of the Hampshire Enhanced Partnership Forum, proposed 3 points for Hampshire County Council to consider incorporating into the Bus Service Improvement Plan, BSIP. One was to use some of the funding to get more resources and catch up on the backlog on the Bus Route Improvement Plan, of which, according to Mr. Jones, over two-thirds still need to be delivered. He also called for more clarity on where money would be spent. Councillor Adrian Collett said that despite the funding ensuring the viability of existing services, we're not succeeding in plugging the gaps where the services don't exist that people desperately need. In response to Councillor Collett's comments, County Council officers said that one proposal in the report allows communities to fill their own gaps. An officer said, "We're putting forward a pot of funding that allows communities, whether it's a parish council, a town council, communities groups, or existing community transport operators, to come forward with proposals that we can receive and then fill those gaps themselves." Councillor Malcolm Wallace mentioned that under the BSIP, there is a share of £75,000 for disability awareness initiatives. Councillor Wallace, who has been contacted by the Waterside Changemakers, a group campaigning to help disadvantaged people in the county fight against the County Council's plan to cut disabled bus passes, said those residents would prefer to get on the bus before 9:30 a.m. rather than have a disability awareness initiative. The cuts are said to affect 17,884 disabled residents and save £73,000 for the administration. Council officers added that the conditions of the BSIP funding are quite strict. If we've cut a service, this cannot be used to refund that service this way. That's simply out of the scope of this funding. He added that £75,000 for disability awareness initiatives is a one-off funding.
Weekend centenary concert. Winchester Philharmonic Choir will be holding its centenary concert on Saturday, March the 22nd. The concert will take place at New Hall, Winchester College, and will celebrate 100 years since the choir's founding in 1925. The event will feature two compositions by George Dyson, Jerusalem from 1956, and three songs of praise from 1935, in addition to Gabriel Fauré's Requiem. Soloists for the concert will be Imogen Russell, soprano, and Marcus Farnsworth, baritone, with the choir being conducted by Sarah Baldock. Performing alongside Winchester Philharmonic Choir and Orchestra will be Winchester College Chantry Choir and the 12 cellos of Winchester College. Winchester Philharmonic Choir was founded by Dr. George Dyson from 1883 to 1964. When he came to Winchester College as Master of Music in 1924, he inherited the Nightjars Madrigal Society. Membership included several singers from the city, and Dyson soon expanded this into a choral society, renaming it Winchester Music Club in 1925, with links to the College Glee Club and founding an orchestral section to support it. A performance in 1963 celebrated Dyson's 80th birthday with a concert of his own work, The Canterbury Pilgrims, featuring soloists Isobel Bailey and Owen Branigan. Over the years, world-renowned musicians such as Kathleen Ferrier, Wilfred Brown, Dennis Brain and Vladimir Ashkenazi have performed with the choir. More recent notable highlights included charity concerts at Winchester Cathedral with Dame Kirita Kanawa in 2008 and Bryn Terwyl in 2009. It was announced in 2022 that following the retirement of David Thomas from directorship of music at Winchester College, his successor would be Miss Sarah Baldock. Winchester Philharmonic Choir is one of Hampshire's longest established choral groups, with more than 100 members and an associated orchestra. It remains an independent charity run by its members. There are two major performances each year, one in Newhall, another in the Cathedral, joined by the College Choirs and the Quiristers, an annual summer Come and Sing, an open choral workshop, plus a pre-Christmas family carol celebration in Newhall. Alongside the centenary, additional to the centenary concert, the Philharmonic Choir will be welcoming composer Bob Chilcott to lead the annual Come and Sing worship at St Paul's Church on Saturday, June the 14th. Open to all singers, the workshop will feature Chilcott's Canticles of Light and a little jazz mass, and will be followed by a summer tea party. And there are two photographs of the choir and orchestra in Winchester Cathedral, and then a delightful one of Sarah conducting and looking while she conducts the orchestra, looking at a soloist singing, glancing across.
Now, the next item is headed Keep Your Pets on Leads Plea to Dog Owners. Dog owners are being urged to keep their pets on leads to protect ground nesting birds. The Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust and the Dogs Trust have made the plea to owners to keep their dogs on leads at this time. The birds are particularly vulnerable to disturbance between February and August. During this time, many migratory bird species, such as skylarks, lapwings, and nightingales, travel thousands of miles to nest on nature reserves across the country. The Wildlife Trust said that unsupervised dogs can cause birds to abandon their nests, which can have long-lasting effects on the breeding success and survival rates of the birds. Karen Kingston, Visitor Engagement Manager at the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, said, "As a nation of dog lovers, we all want to enjoy the great outdoors with our furry companions, but we must also remember that we share these spaces with wildlife that depends on them for survival. By keeping dogs on leads during the ground nesting bird season, we can help protect vulnerable birds and other species. Small changes in our behaviour can make a big difference, ensuring that future generations can continue to enjoy the sights and sounds of nature in our beautiful landscapes. The Trust has had to fence off certain areas of Barton Meadows near Winchester to protect nesting skylarks. Visitors are asked to keep to marked paths and keep dogs on leads to help safeguard these vulnerable birds. The UK lapwing population has plummeted by 55% since 1967.
Survey shows NHS staff morale improved. Staff at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust have reported improved morale and engagement. The results are from the most recent National NHS Staff Survey. The survey, which is conducted annually, invites every NHS staff member to share their experiences. In the 2024 survey, Hampshire Hospitals, which operates hospitals in Andover, Basingstoke and Winchester, improved its score in 8 of the 9 People Promise theme areas. The Trust also saw a statistically significant improvement in engagement and morale. Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, said, "Over 4,000 of our colleagues shared their thoughts and experiences of working at Hampshire Hospitals. These insights are so valuable in ensuring we're creating a workplace where people can thrive, feel valued and well supported. There are real positives in the feedback we've received this year, and it's been encouraging to see strong improvements across so many of the People Promise themes, as well as engagement and morale more generally."
College Ugly Bugs for Flower Show. Spotsholt College will design a garden for the 2020 this year's Royal Horticultural Society Chelsea Flower Show. The land-based further education college has teamed up with the Royal Entomological Society to create the Ugly Bug Ball Garden, which will show visitors the beauty of the miniature world of invertebrates. The garden will aim to encourage people to welcome insects, often overlooked, but vital, beneficial if not vital, into their gardens and green spaces. Sparsholt's team of full-time and part-time mature horticultural learners will design the garden, which will highlight different plants and habitats that support beneficial insects. The design is inspired by the Royal Entomological Society's book, insects discover the science and secrets behind the world of insects. Lucy Lewis, who is the horticultural lecturer at Sparsholt, said the team have fully embraced this year's theme, researching and learning about beneficial insects such as moths, springtails and earwigs.
Library in running to be best in the UK. The library's creative initiative has earned its a spot in the national finals of the Library of the Year awards. Winchester Library was named the joint winner for the South East region alongside West Sussex Libraries for its efforts to encourage reading among people with learning disabilities. The library's Read Aloud drop-in sessions, created by staff member Rebecca Ledley, helped the library to receive the accolade. The sessions, which involve free 30-minute readings of classic and modern tales, were designed to provide a welcoming space for adults with learning disabilities to enjoy interactive storytelling. The initiative led to a 40% increase in library membership among participants. Rebecca said, "Being a regional finalist was exciting enough, but I'm so thrilled that our entry has made it to the national finals. Reading aloud is a simple but effective way to encourage a love of books and storytelling for everyone." And that's accompanied by a beautiful coloured photograph of Rebecca and manager Hannah Hitchin standing along by the shelves of very colourful paperbacks, looking very pleased about the way things have gone for them.
Historic steam train finally back on track. A historic steam locomotive is making a return to the tracks after a 14-year restoration. The Watercress Line's SR Merchant Navy Class Locomotive number 35005, Canadian Pacific, will be back in action this month. The public will have the chance to be among the first passengers to enjoy a nostalgic ride on the newly restored locomotive from starting on Thursday, the March the 20th, but running through to Sunday, March the 23rd. The restoration of Canadian Pacific has been a monumental 14-year project, driven by the Watercress Line's skilled volunteers who spent more than 10,000 hours on the renovation of the bullied Merchant Navy class locomotive and two bullied carriages, 4211 and 1456. The locomotive was built in 1941 by a team which included many women working for Southern Railway at the Eastleigh Locomotive Works. It was designed for Southern Railway by Chief Mechanical Engineer Oliver Bullied and featured an innovative design with a mixed traffic designation, providing a wartime service on the South Coast route. After the war, it hauled the luxury boat trains of the mid-20th century, such as the Bournemouth, Bell, Royal Wessex and Atlantic Coast Express. The Watercress Line began restoration work in 2011 at the Eastleigh Works. Rebecca Daly, CEO of the Watercress Line, said, "This fantastic restoration of the historic locomotive Canadian Pacific is a testament to the dedication of our volunteers and the unwavering support of our partners. Canadian Pacific is not just a locomotive. She represents the rich heritage of British engineering and the enduring spirit of our railway community." Volunteer Brian Carter added, "Working on Canadian Pacific has been a once-in-a-lifetime experience and a great team effort in bringing this fantastic locomotive back to life." The project received £1,254,400 from the National Lottery Heritage Fund. Eilish McGuinness, Chief Executive of the National Lottery Fund, said, "Canadian Pacific is a locomotive which tells an incredible story of our industrial past, from its wartime build through to its commercial service pulling luxury boat trains. It has now been meticulously restored over more than 10 years by dedicated volunteers and will be operated by the Watercress Line, preserving and sharing this unique heritage with everyone now and in the future. And if you are listening to this in time for its inaugural weekend, which runs until Sunday, March the 23rd, you can go on and book online through the Watercress Line website, Special Days Canadian Pacific Launch.
Bid to raise £1.2 million for theatre extension. Fundraising plans for extension at a historic theatre in Winchester have been announced. Chesil Theatre, which has been at the heart of Winchester entertainment scene for more than 150 years, revealed the plans at a special event for members and invited guests. The extension will be a modern addition to the medieval listed building, which the theatre company has occupied since 1962. It already has planning permission. The scheme will include a light-filled entrance, a bar foyer, a studio and community space, improved accessibility facilities, and overall enhancements throughout the theatre. A major fundraising campaign is now underway. Joe Matthews, who has a successful history of fundraising for Shakespeare's Globe Theatre and is a past chairman of the Little Theatre Guild, provided inspiration at the campaign launch. She said, "I am thrilled to be part of this transformative journey for the Chesil Theatre. This will not only enhance its historic charm, but create new opportunities for community engagement and artistic expression. We look forward to the Winchester community, individuals, groups and businesses joining us on this exciting journey."
Funding to support Hampshire refugees. Over £7 million in dedicated funding will be allocated to support refugees from Afghanistan in Hampshire. The Home Office will fully fund the resettlement support services. Hampshire County Council approved on March the 11th to spend £7,235,000 over the next 5 years to recommission the support contract to resettle people in Hampshire who flee Afghanistan due to the war. Many of them worked for the British military forces. The Hampshire Resettlement Support Service has worked in the county since 2021. The service ensures the council supports Afghan refugees from the time they arrive in areas with matters such as understanding benefits, finances, health, registering for a GP, education, employment and training. As part of the Home Office funding instructions, Hampshire County Council must ensure that resettled individuals are supported during a specific period to aid their integration into the UK. For those arriving from Afghanistan, this support is offered for 3 years, starting from the moment they settle into their permanent accommodation in Hampshire. Since the start of the service in 2021, the council has supported 431 Afghan individuals of all ages in settled accommodation. The ages currently range from 87 years old to a newborn baby. Councillor Russell Oppenheimer welcomed the funding and said Hampshire had a good track record in welcoming refugees from war zone places such as Ukraine or Afghanistan.
New screening programme. An initiative has been launched to improve chronic kidney disease screening. NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight have partnered with a major global pharmaceutical company for the initiative to help identify and support people at higher risk of developing the disease, especially those with health inequalities. In the UK, Chronic kidney disease affects about 10% of adults, but many cases are undiagnosed until the disease has significantly progressed. The new initiative aims to improve early detection by increasing access to screening in communities where accessing care is more difficult. It will also provide targeted outreach, ensuring that those most at risk receive timely intervention and support. Dr. Charlotte Hutchings, local GP and clinical director at NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight, said, "Early detection of chronic kidney disease is crucial in preventing serious complications, including kidney failure." The scheme, named SPOT, Screening, Prevention, Outreach and Treatment for Health Equity, will provide access to kidney health education, encourage people to speak to their GPs, manage their lifestyle to reduce their risk, and promote early intervention through timely diagnosis.
Campaign for Airport Connection. A campaign has been launched to connect Hampshire to Heathrow Airport via a direct rail link. The Hampshire to Heathrow initiative aims to secure the future of rail travel in the region by introducing the Heathrow Southern Railway. This project aims to offer a direct rail link between the South Western Main Line and Heathrow Airport, benefiting many communities across Hampshire, Southampton, Winchester, Basingstoke and Portsmouth. The campaign is being led by local campaigner and former Trade Minister Sir Anil Jayawardena. Sir Anil said, "With Hampshire to Heathrow, we're not only seeking to make travel easier for people getting to and from Britain's biggest airport, but also opening up our county to greater economic opportunities. Having served as International Trade Minister, I secured inward investment and greater trade opportunities across the United Kingdom. So I know that projects like this are critical to positioning any area as open for business. Together we can connect our communities to the world and improve Hampshire's infrastructure in the process." People across Hampshire are encouraged to show their support for the initiative by completing a 67 survey on the campaign's website, which is ranel.uk Hampshire to Heathrow.
Dogs and their owners walk for families. 50 walkers and their dogs will be raising money for a family support charity next month. The group will be taking to the fields and lanes around Itchin Abbas to raise funds for Home Start Winchester and districts. Home Start Events Chairman Chrissy Barlow said, "Dogs are not compulsory. You can come for the exercise or even just for lunch. It's always a great opportunity to meet old friends and enjoy a walk in the spring sunshine, and it's a firm favourite in our fundraising calendar. We've held the walk in different parts of the Hampshire countryside every year since 2012, and walkers have taken part whatever the weather." Dan Bliss of Gay Dog Boarding Kennels said, "This is our 8th year of sponsoring the walk, and we're very happy to be supporting Home Start and the work that the charity does with young families in the area." The dog walk takes place on Friday, April the 4th, and starts at Itchin Abbas Village Hall. Arrival is at 10:45 a.m. and departure is at 11 a.m. There will be two walks of different lengths, which may include some stiles, and a ploughman's lunch will be ready to welcome walkers on their return. Tickets cost £15 and can be booked online at ticketsource.co.uk/home-start-winchester-districts.
Choir on Song raising £1,000 for hospice. A Hampshire choir has raised £1,000 for a hospice after a Sound of Music event. The funds were raised during a Come and Sing Day by Compton and Shawford Festival Choir, which took place at the Colden Common Community Centre on Sunday, February the 23rd. Proceeds from the day have been given to the Mountbatten Hampshire Hospice, a community and hospice end-of-life and palliative care provider.
Plea after toilets fire. A public toilet has been set alight, with police issuing a call for more information. One of the cubicles at the River Park facilities, outside the former leisure centre, was reported to be burning at around 6:40 p.m. on Thursday, March the 13th. If you can cast any, have any information or wish to confess your involvement, please contact the police. Thank you.
Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. When you've finished with the recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, place the correct address label on the front, and return it as soon as possible. Thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, and of course, many thanks to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And Paul Newman.
Goodbye.
And from me, Barbara Kearns, thank you for listening, and until the next time, goodbye and have a great week.